Welcome to Zony Living. We're going to start today with beer and the women who make a great commotion. A great commotion like this woman on this beer can. In a moment, we'll tell you about her and her role in Arizona history and the story behind this philanthropic Arizona original craft beer and the company that makes it. That's Mother Road Brewing Company, located on Route 66 in Flagstaff, on the Mother Road. It's grounded in its commitment to history, education, conservation, and Arizona. What it values is no secret. It's on the cans and in their actions. We'll also learn how to work and lead people who are not like ourselves from diversity expert Kelly McDonald. But first, joining us in the studio from Mother Road Brewing Company is Stephanie Henderson. Welcome, Stephanie. It's great to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Bonnie.
I wanted to jump right in with the Arizona craft beer, the Commotion, the Great Commotion beer.
Yes, the Arizona Women's Brew. You know, we're always producing our mainline beers, but the real joy of craft beer is the collaborations that we get to do. So this is the Arizona Women's Brew. It takes place every year. A different brewery hosts it and brings together all walks of life from females in the brewing industry, everything from the draft technicians to the sales reps to the brewers. And we come together and brew a beer in solidarity of women.
What a great celebration. I love that. And the woman that's on Great Commotion from Mother Road Brewing is, her name is Miss Anna Durkee. She has a great role in Arizona history. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, she really does. The fun part, too, about craft beer is having fun in the names and deriving the stories. And, of course, with the Mother Road, we're going to stay true to themes of Route 66. So we wanted to look up a woman who pioneered something or was a leader in Arizona and on Route 66. So Anna Durkee ran an all-woman-run garnet mining company in Alaska, and she received a tip on a piece of land in Oatman, Arizona, shortly before the gold rush happened in 1916. So she ends up also purchasing a mine in Oatman and becomes very successful. And we actually have a clipping from the Wichita Daily Eagle in 1916, I believe. She's getting interviewed for her success, and the prompt is, you know, how have you gotten to this point? And her quote exactly says, I can't see why a woman cannot run a gold mine just as well as a man. If a man had been successful in his investments as I have been, nothing would be thought of it. But because I'm a woman, there's a great commotion over it.
You know, and I love that, Stephanie, and I want to encourage all women to make a great commotion in everything that they do. Let's jump now to another beer called Conserve and Protect. This is another one of my favorite ideas.
Yeah, so we...
Not my idea, your company's idea.
Well, we started this project in 2019, and we make this beer in partnership with the Arizona Game and Fish Department. We had an employee whose father worked for the department, and we thought off the cuff that we would come out with a small batch of this beer and donate a portion of the proceeds back to Arizona Game and Fish. Shortly realized after that run, there was absolutely no reason we shouldn't be doing this all of the time.
Amazing. And this has been hugely successful. In fact, we have a picture of a desert tortoise that is one of the beneficiaries of this beer.
Correct.
You can tell me about that. And there are other wildlife species as well.
Absolutely. Yes. The Mount Graham squirrel, the Sonoran desert tortoise. The Arizona Game and Fish Department is not funded by the state of Arizona, so the proceeds that we're able to give back to them really help move the needle with what they need to accomplish in the state. And it's nice because they do have that autonomy to use those funds as they see fit. In all 3 years of the partnership, we've been able to donate a little shy of $40,000 just in matched beer sales.
Unbelievable. Just hugely successful, and what a great cause. I wanted to talk about Mother Road Brewing Company during the pandemic. Michael Marquez, the owner and founder of Mother Road Brewing Company, heard that NAU, Northern Arizona University's Klein Library, the Special Collections Division, was awarded a grant to bring awareness to the diverse populations of Route 66. And as the story goes, Mother Road Brewing Company owner Michael Marquez learned about this and wanted to help out because that's just who he is.
Absolutely. He's a graduate from the Hotel Restaurant Management School at NAU and has spent most of his time in Flagstaff, so it's very natural that philanthropy to roll through. But yeah, we love the special archives, everything that Fred Harvey has contributed, kind of being the grandfather of hospitality. So this was an opportunity, this archive ale, to highlight some of the more diverse populations of Route 66 and really shine a light on their stories.
And those cans are really fun as well. what this the proceeds from this beer did was ensure that NAU had enough money to hire some interns that were paid interns who could help archive the many, many boxes of Route 66 photos and documents. And the Fred Harvey collection, as you mentioned, was over 100 boxes alone. So that was a huge deal. They were also able to pay for people to capture oral histories and get those archived and saved for the history of Route 66, which I think is just so, so cool. But then also during the pandemic, Mother Road Brewing Company also was very resourceful with its aluminum cans.
Yes, resourceful is one of our values. It's a creed in which we live by, and we try to live through that value in every facet, be it time, resources, money. We are resourceful. You can see on this can here, we have a can that is not matching this label, and that's just out of resourcefulness. There's just not a world where we would toss a perfectly good can when we could just wrap it over.
So people appreciate
that. One small example.
Absolutely. You know, once you know the story, you absolutely you look for the difference and you appreciate that conservation. And so this is a picture of the Reardon Mansion.
Right.
And this was the brothers, the Reardon brothers were lumberjacks.
Yes, they were.
And they were part of the founding of Flagstaff. And
absolutely.
This mansion, which is a fantastic piece of architecture, but was in need of some help.
Right. Yes. To know Flagstaff is to know the Reardon brothers. They were responsible for heading up Lowell Observatory, Northern Arizona University, parts of Coconino County Forest, and that being registered as a county. So, yeah, we heard that the mansion was in need of some restoration, and as a company who values history at its core, it just seemed like a really natural thing. So, we made this beer. We had a brewer come up with the recipe. We had our crew vote on the name and the style, and we were lucky enough to borrow some original artwork from Linda Sherman, a beautiful hand-painted photo of Reardon Mansion. So,
you know, it is beautiful, but also if you are lucky enough to find these beers, and where can we find them? They're all over Arizona.
Yes, we have fed the Arizona market. We have chosen not to go out of the state as far as distribution goes, so we can take care of Arizona. So at this point, you can find most all of our beers at Fry's, Safeway, Albertsons, AJ's, Sprouts, Total Wine, most of all the big chain grocery stores. And please feel free to visit our website, motherroadbeer.com. We do have a beer finder. You can just plug in your zip code, and it'll show you not only the grocery stores you can find our beers, but the bars and restaurants in your area.
And on the can, Stephanie, there's usually a great story. And this one, this is the Reardon Mansion beer. And I can't say the Fin de siècle. And
what is turn of the century.
Oh, okay. There you go.
French.
And it also has this nice story on the side, and it says, "This is a beer fit for warm afternoons spent exploring the history of the Southwest." So, you know, just fun.
We are puckish with our labels.
Puckish. And that's one of your values too, your
it
stated
is.
Values, isn't it?
That's it
right.
Is.
And besides all the good things that Mother Road Brewing Company supports, all the great causes, it also makes award-winning beer.
Yeah, we are lucky to have won a couple of awards for our environmental distinction that we do with Conserve and Protect.
So Tower that's the Station. Arizona Game and Fish beer.
Correct. So we were awarded the Environmental Excellence Award of
Distinction.
Congratulations.
That's incredible.
Thank you. Issued by the governor and Arizona Forward. So that was fantastic, especially because we were up against a lot of environmental initiatives, and for, you know, a beer to have won that award is really profound.
It's really special.
It is.
Yeah.
And Tower Station, for the past 130 weeks, has been the number one best-selling independent beer in Arizona. Independent meaning still family-owned and not owned by Anheuser-Busch or Molson Coors. So we're humbled by that success.
And congratulations. Mother Road Brewing Company has been around for only 11 years and has done so much good for Arizona. So congratulations to Mother Road Brewing Company. And Stephanie Henderson, you are Arizona Craft Beer Director at Mother Road Brewing Company. And congratulations on your personal success.
I appreciate it. I've been lucky to have been given the opportunity to grow. And that's the beautiful thing about craft beer is your passion and yearn to want to know more is just as valued as any relative education or experience. So I always recommend it as a job choice.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations. It was great having you here. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you. Thanks, Bonnie.
You can read more about Mother Road Brewing Company at Flagstaff Business News on the streets of Flagstaff or at flagstaffbusinessnews.com. Do you ever feel awkward around someone who doesn't look, act, or think like you? Just admitting this may feel politically incorrect. Four-time best-selling author Kelly MacDonald is bringing these issues out into the open. She's considered one of the nation's top leadership experts in diversity, equity, and inclusion. And because we are increasingly working with people not like us, she's written a book to help us navigate what sometimes feels like very uncomfortable waters. Her book is called How to Work With and Lead People Not Like You. Kelly joins us now from Estes Park, Colorado. Hi, Kelly.
Hey,
Bonnie. Hey. Hi. So, great to have you here. I know you've been traveling a lot talking about your book.
Yep. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Well, when people hear the word diversity in organizations, it often puts us on edge. I know you feel that a lot. You hear that a lot. It feels like trouble. It feels like we may have to be really careful about what we might say. It feels like work, like we might have to go to training classes so that we don't say anything offensive. Kelly, why do we feel this way, and how do we get past this discomfort?
It's a great question, and I think, Bonnie, that one of the things that has happened over the last couple of decades is as diversity training entered a lot of corporate environments and organizations, the focus was on diversifying the team, but not on how do we work together. Like, it was on the what, but not the how.
Absolutely.
And what I find is that people, to your point, are so afraid of saying the wrong thing or having what they say taken the wrong way that they choose to say nothing. And that's, I don't think that's good for business. I think we have to always be able to talk about things, and especially the difficult things, because that's how we keep the ball moving forward on business. And that's why I wrote the book. And that's one of the things I talk to groups and organizations and conferences about is how do we do this? Because people want to do the right thing. They just don't know what that is. They don't know what that is or what that sounds like.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of ways that people do feel uncomfortable and feel left out in an organization. And you and I talked about this earlier. We're talking about passive aggressive behaviors like freezing people out of not including them in emails or meetings, sometimes withholding information. And and some of this can feel pretty nasty and feel intentional, but maybe more commonly, we may not be able to understand each other very well. We may don't understand where they're coming from, their opinions, their cultures, or any number of ways that we may be different. Tell us about that.
Well, I think you're right. You hit the nail on the head, and there's sort of two things going on in your statement. The first being the people who are truly sabotaging somebody else at work for whatever reason. You know, they've got a grievance, they don't like them. You know, they're trying to make them look bad for whatever reason. And I think in any office culture, you have that kind of person who is doing the info hoarding or, you know, just making sure that that person is not set up to succeed. But I think among people who are what I'm going to call normal, good people working,
which is most struggle, people in the workplace,
the struggle becomes, if you're different from me, how do I bridge that gap? Because I don't think like you. I don't maybe behave like you. I don't understand the perspective that you're coming from. And I would like to take this moment real quick to just say that when I talk about people not like you, that's a very deliberate phrase on my part for business, because I think people think very, very narrowly when they hear the word diversity. They think race, ethnicity, age or generational differences, gender, and now sexual identification or gender identification. And so those are important. Those are what I call the big five. But I believe any way that you can be different from me means diversity. So if you're an introvert and I'm an extrovert, we're going to be very different. If at work you're a risk taker and I'm risk averse, we're going to be very, very different. You know, even if you're a morning person and I'm a night owl, we're going to be different. So everybody has a different kind of work style, and we all bring our backgrounds, our perspectives, our culture, our frame of mind, everything to work. And if I'm different from you, I've got to figure out how to connect with you in a meaningful way so that we can be productive together.
You know, Kelly, and you bring out in your book, and I really like this, that in your book, you give an example of how people can be different in thought too.
Yes.
And you had a great example in your book, and I want to ask you to share that about Bethany Frankel's Skinny Girl brand.
Right. So it is a great example because sometimes diversity of thought, and also in this case, it's also diversity of perspective. Bethany Frankel, you know, one of the original housewives,
yes,
right? Real Housewives. I think it was Real Housewives of New York.
Yes.
The flipping tables and stuff that they do. She had an idea that maybe women would like a really good tasting, low calorie cocktail that didn't blow 40% of their day's calories.
Right.
So she took that concept and she pitched every single major liquor company in the United States, every single one of them. And every single one of them turned her down. And what I'm about to say next is not sexist, it's just fact, which is every one of those companies is headed by men. So the other thing that's factual is that for men, they metabolize calories differently than women do. It's just harder for us. And that's a fact.
Yeah.
So our bodies operate differently. So when she pitched this concept for a good tasting low calorie cocktail and was turned down by every company, she went ahead and forged ahead on her own and built the company and the brand. And in 2 years, and if you think about how fast 2 years go by, it goes by for me like that.
For sure.
She sold 400 million cases of Skinny Girl. Okay. 400 million cases. So clearly there was a demand for the product. And at that point, Beam, as in Jim Beam, that liquor company, bought her company back from her for $100 million. The same company that they had taken a pass on just 24 months earlier that they could have gotten for a song.
Oops.
So yeah, oops, for sure. I mean, at least they were smart enough to jump on and get in there after the first 400 million cases, but they missed out on those. And what I think happened here was what I call a failure of perspective. And that is, I don't think that when she went in to pitch these companies that they thought her idea was stupid or bad. I think they just didn't get it. I think they were like, I don't know if anybody's going to buy this.
Sure.
Well, heck yeah, we are.
Understandable if you're coming from that perspective. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're a man at that table and you're just kind of going, you know, I don't know, it's okay, but I don't know if there's really a market for this. I promise you, if there'd been some women around that table, those women would have been like, hold up.
Serve me up.
We are onto something big here.
Yeah.
And that's failure of perspective. And that has nothing to do with race, ethnicity, age, gender. Well, it does have to do with gender, but it's a failure of perspective more than anything else, and a true way of being diverse and how it can hurt business when we don't consider other people's views and backgrounds and perspectives.
You also had a really good point in your book when you're talking about paying attention to the key opinion leaders that are in you're on your radar, the people in your company. And I believe you called them pilot fish.
Yes.
People who are making a difference.
So, pilot fish is one of my favorite phrases, and it comes from fish, okay, schools of fish. And it's funny because it's like, you know, if you've ever watched National Geographic or the Nature Channel or something like that, you see these schools of fish and they're swimming, millions of them, hundreds of thousands of them, and then they turn on a dime.
Oh,
and they
so
all
fast.
Turn exactly at the same time.
Yes.
And so the question becomes like, how do they know to turn, right? Like they're doing it all at the same time. How do they know? What's the communication? And there is a pilot fish at the front of that school. And that fish is seriously the pilot of that school. And when that fish turns, all the other fish do too. And so I translate that to business then and say, in any organization, whether you're in a leadership position or not, or whether people are, they can be pilot fish. Those are the people who are influential. They are the people who are opinion leaders. They are the ones that other people listen to. And so even if they're not a supervisor or a manager or a leader, you kind of know who they are. You know who are the people who everyone else in the company, when they hear a rumor or something, is going to go talk to that person and say, what's going on? You know, and it's very important as a leader, if you're trying to make your team more productive, despite their differences or, you know, with their differences, is to cultivate the pilot fish and say to them, look, we know that, you know, people really respect you and listen to what you say. And we need your help going forward on our diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts because it really matters. And people are going to have questions and they're going to come to you. And so we need your help to lead this, even or to support this, I should say, to support this as we go down this road. And I think it's really important because those pilot fish are there and they really do shape opinions.
Yeah, they are leaders in the company, whether they have that title on their on their desk or not.
Yeah.
I wanted to also talk about building the pipeline to make sure that you are cultivating diversity for leadership roles.
Yes, it's a really important hot topic now because every company has kind of, I would say, had a realization that, you know, the world is changing and we're all becoming more diverse, and maybe their company hasn't really reflected that till now. And so the best companies are the ones who are saying, you know what, we're not as diverse as we could be, and we know we need to change that. So we need to get more people into the pipeline. And the reason the pipeline is important is because one of the things I hear from organizations, and especially people who hire, is they'll say, there are no good candidates. You know, like, we don't have any good candidates to hire. And the good candidates are always out there. It may mean that you have to change your recruiting and your focus of where you're looking for people, but that's where the pipeline becomes important. Because if you bring diverse talent into your organization, like any other talent that you're grooming, you want to groom them to lead and move up and promote. And so you can't just wave your magic wand and say, okay, we have diverse people now, we're good. Because that leadership needs to be cultivated and supported, and so that people succeed in those positions when those positions are available to them. Otherwise, it's the worst kind of tokenism. Mm. It's the worst.
I've seen it.
And
yeah, the
and
backlash.
It's not fair to anybody.
Right.
It's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also talked about how to help people in the organization chart their path to become leaders. And that responsibility is on the person who wants to climb the ladder, but it's also on the responsibility, I believe, on leadership as well. So you talk about that too.
I do. Thanks, Bonnie. This is one of my favorite things to talk about because I have a very good friend who is a Black professor at the University of Utah. And she was sharing with me that earlier on in her career, she was working for an organization, not in academia at that point. And her boss, another woman, called her into her office one day and said, hey, so-and-so is going to be retiring the company in 6 months. And she asked my friend, do you want that position? And my friend said, yes. And she said, okay, so we have 6 months to get you ready for it. And what that means is you're going to have to sit on some committees. You're going to need to be introduced to some people that you don't know, and you're going to need to put in some time and work on these committees so that when the 6 month period is up and they're filling the position, you're not only eligible, you're qualified because you've already been doing the work and people know you. And yes. I thought that was such a great and simple story of both of them working together. I mean, her boss did not do the work for her. She was she was the one having to work on nights and weekends on these committees and do all this extra work in addition to her full-time job. But her boss was smart enough to say, okay, we have 6 months. You need to meet some people. Nobody knows you in this organization. I'm going to help you and open some doors in that area and get you on some of these committees that will share with, that you'll learn from about how we need leadership going forward and what these positions entail. And I just thought it was such a no-cost tactic that yields big results. And my friend did get the job, and she was wildly successful in that role because her mentor and her boss set her up to succeed.
That's the way to do it. That's really great leadership. You know,
you
dedicate a whole section in your book about making the We Value Diversity message real. And you describe walking the walk, educating people about diversity on a daily basis, and also making a diversity plan and treating it like any other business plan, like a marketing plan that you don't leave on the shelf, you bring out and you follow. So I wanted you to expand on these concepts a little bit and leave us with some really great advice about what leaders can do.
Great. So We Value Diversity is a statement that every company or organization wants to make these days.
Sure.
But like anything else, if it's not sincere, that's 100% transparent. We can tell when you mean it and when you don't. And when you're mouthing the words or saying the words or putting those words on your website, but there's nothing to back it up. So if you're going to be truly committed to making your organization more diverse, more equitable, and more inclusive, then there's some things that you really have to do. And one of them is, again, build that pipeline of talent. That's really important. You not only need diverse talent today, but you're going to need diverse talent tomorrow and then in the next 5 years and in the next 10. And you're going to want diverse talent at the leadership level so that you're gaining the benefit of different perspectives. I mean, that's what makes great companies great, is that they can actually anticipate future problems. And that's because they do look at different perspectives. So it is about maintaining that pipeline and building that pipeline with good talent. And then also really being involved in the community. You can't just, to me, it's kind of like saying, we're all about sustainability, but you're not even like recycling paper at your office or something. And
so right, easy to say.
You got to walk the walk on this stuff. And I think if you really support diverse talent and diversity as a concept, a business concept, not kumbaya, we are the world, but as a business concept, then put your money where your mouth is and start perhaps, you know, maybe donating a scholarship to an underserved high school so that somebody can go to college and get a higher education, maybe doing internships, et cetera, and really just, you know, walking that walk. The other thing is it has to be consistent. You can't do what I call, Bonnie, launch and abandon. Okay. Mm. That's also one of the worst things that you can do is, oh, we're going to be doing diversity and inclusion now. And you talk about it in January or February of your fiscal year, and then you never talk about it again. So this is an ongoing part of your business. And as you mentioned, treating it like any other part of your business. Every organization is constantly looking at market opportunities, competitive opportunities or competitive threats, marketing, sales, technology, social media. All of these things are a regular part of business conversations today in any organization. Diversity, equity, inclusion should be part of that too, because this is the fabric of our business going forward. And so this isn't something that you can say, you know, again, we value this, and so we can check that off the list now. We said that. You've got to walk the walk. And if you do, the thing that leaders need to know is that employees are watching at all times.
Absolutely.
At all times. And the actions speak louder than the words. And so one more point I'd like to make on this too is, there's horror stories of many organizations that have hired diverse talent, but they don't necessarily include them. Okay. So there they are, they're on the payroll, they're on the org chart, but they don't really have a voice at the table. And so that's a great diversity effort, but the real value in diversity is not just having a person who looks different than you or is different than you there, it's their perspective. Yes. And so the best organizations are finding ways to really make sure that they're garnering the different perspectives and saying, we want to hear from you. We want to have meetings that you're included in, or we want to have ways that we are talking about this macro problem with everybody and getting the different perspectives that perhaps they lack.
You know, Kelly, you talked to me about a great icebreaker that you've done with executive teams. And that that really does break down the walls and help people get to know people. And I think that's part of it. Building, it's helping people build a relationship and take the first step to finding out something different. So share that with us a little bit.
Sure. And I can't say it's original. It was a boss of mine who did this years ago, and it was wildly successful. First of all, let me give you my setup on this, which is business is very important. And of course, at work, we're there to do a job. But people are people. And at the end of the day, we're people doing a job, and we have lives and we have families and we have interests, et cetera. And so what this particular boss of mine did years ago, there were about 60 of us in a team that were working at a global ad agency. And so we knew some of the, you know, team, and we certainly saw the names on the emails, but I didn't know everybody on the team. It was just, you know, I didn't interact with everybody. And he pulled us all into a conference room one day and told us not to sit. So that tells you it's going to be a short meeting.
I love those kinds of bosses.
I know. And so we're standing there. All of us are standing there around this massive conference table, and we're like wondering what we're there for. And he's like, don't sit. And he said, we all work together. And so we have the same values and the same goals when it comes to our clients and, you know, the job that we do. And he said, but I think we can do a better job if we know each other a little bit better. And I would like everyone in the room to go around and share something about themselves that the others are not likely to know. And then he threw in just a little, you know, a little humor. He said, you don't have to tell us about your felony arrest. You know, so he's like, just tell the group something that the others are not likely to know anything about. And so it was fascinating, funny. And for example, there was one woman who said, I can do a proper English curtsy. And so all the rest of us were like, let's see it.
Yeah,
and she gets down on the floor and does this English, this British curtsy, you know, for the queen, as it were. And then there was another guy that I barely knew. I knew his name and I saw him in the hallways, but we didn't really interact. And he said, my wife and I are in the process of adopting a little baby girl.
Mm.
And of course the whole room goes, oh,
yes.
You know, but the point is, I no longer saw him as just somebody from accounting.
Right.
He was a guy from accounting who was also a devoted dad now in my mind. Right. And every time I saw him, I had something to springboard off of. I was like, hey, Carl, how's your little girl? And for 2 years, he would tell me how she was, you know, she's learning her ABCs or whatever. And so that's the part I think that a leader can do. These little exercises that give people who are different something to anchor onto that is safe, that is comfortable, that is funny, that is human.
Human, of course.
Yeah. And it was just a really great exercise that cost nothing. And all of us ended up with all this stuff that we could talk to each other about. And it built bridges in ways that I think just traditional training can't.
Absolutely. Well, Kelly, before we let you go, you have to show us outside your window at Estes Park.
All right. So for those who don't know, Estes Park, Colorado is about 90 minutes north and west of Denver. And it is right outside the gates of Rocky Mountain National Park. So I'll just give you, I have to bear with me here while I swivel around. So
absolutely.
I have a view this way.
Beautiful.
And then I'll give you another view that I think is even better. Here I am swiveling again.
So we're looking at the Rocky Mountains.
Yes, we are. We're looking at the Rocky Mountains.
If I can tell, it looks like there's a little snow still out there.
There's a little bit of snow. Yeah. Every weekend, there's a little bit less. But let's see. Yeah, I think you can get a pretty good sense of the beauty that I'm surrounded with here.
Just gorgeous.
One more time.
Well, no wonder you
can. That's a better shot.
That probably helped.
I've got that mountain there.
There it is.
Yeah.
This must be where you write 4 books.
You know, it really does help to have some peace and serenity when you're trying, when your head is full of ideas and you're trying to like crystallize it down to some words.
Well, fantastic. Kelly, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Zoni Living, and I hope you'll visit us again. Just tons of great ideas. Love your energy and love what you're doing to help us in the workplace be better to ourselves and to each other.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and the fact that you are paying attention to this topic and your listeners and followers and viewers are too really, really makes my day. Thanks.
Oh, fantastic. Well, have a great day up there.
You too.
The book, How to Work With and Lead People Not Like You, is available on Amazon. You can read more about Kelly McDonald also at flagstaffbusinessnews.com or quadcitiesbusinessnews.com. A healthy business, a healthy workforce is all about building trust and earning respect. Mother Road Brewing Company does it with their labels and actions. Kelly McDonald shows us how we can all try a little harder to understand and appreciate each other's differences. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Zoni Living, Business, Adventure, and Leadership. I'm Bonnie Stevens.